Live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
We continue now looking at economic factors. We look at the economy. And as we just spoke about the IMF revising its growth forecast lower for most countries, including South Africa. South Africa in particular down 0.5%. We also had the World Bank coming out with its growth forecast for sub-Saharan Africa as well as South Africa. And that's looking a little bit more positive because they're expecting a rise in 2025. For sub-Saharan Africa, they say that growth will edge up 3.3% in 2024 and 3.5% in 2025 and further accelerate to 4.3%. That's for sub-Saharan Africa, the entire region. But interestingly, for South Africa, it's projected to recover from 0.6% last year to an average of 1.8% between 2025 and 2027. It's a little bit more positive than the IMF's projection of just 1% for this year. And we don't know, this is just, you know, we're now sitting in at the end of April. We may see that change as we move further down the line this year. I'm joined now by Azar Jameen, economist with Econometrics. Azar, a very good evening to you. Always good to chat to you.
Thank you. And thank you to your listeners as well for listening.
Azar, just looking at the World Bank report, it's interesting that they are looking at a little bit more positivity coming through from the sub-Saharan African region, but also raising some concerns and some uncertainty around what's going to happen for the rest of the year. This may not play out as it expects.
Without a doubt, people are very concerned about what the impact of the tariff increases by the United States will be on the entire world. And if it is very negative, it will redound to the detriment also of sub-Saharan Africa. I'd just like to correct you. You know, the IMF itself also forecast a 3.8% growth rate for sub-Saharan Africa this year, although that was down on a previous forecast of 4.2%. And this is mainly because they foresee much higher growth rates in many other sub-Saharan African countries outside of South Africa and its immediate entourage. So South Africa is the laggard. Other African countries are projected to grow a lot faster and closer into line with and in excess of the growth in their populations. So the gap between South Africa and the rest of Africa is set to gradually diminish over time. And but the fact is that if there is a global downturn, it's going to hit all of us. And that's why we see these downward revisions of economic growth. There's only a handful where there has actually been an upward revision of growth, a small upward revision for Turkey, for whatever the reason is, and for Argentina. We know they're embarking upon massive structural reforms, and on Russia. But other than that, all the forecasts are sharply down. The consolation is that the downward revision of 0.5% for South Africa's growth that you alluded to is no worse than the average for the world, which is, for the world, it's down from 3.3 to 2.8. For us, it's down from 1.5 to 1.0. So that's, in both cases, 0.5% reduction. And the same thing for next year, for 0.3% reduction.
Azar, give us more context as to why South Africa is lagging behind the other sub-Saharan African countries.
Oh, it's very simple. It's very simple, and you would have heard Professor Yanni Rousseau outlining the fact there's been far too much government interference in the economy and far too much regulation. The private sector has not been free to operate the way it really needed to in order to prosper and create employment. And this has a vicious downward circle. Secondly, we have not done what should have been done in terms of uplifting the capabilities of our workforce through education and appropriate training and development, both academically and in artisanal areas. Thirdly, the government has done very little to really promote small business activity. Instead, the South African economy continues to be dominated by big business and very powerful labor unions and big government and Paris state-owned enterprises, rather than seeing a proliferation of small businesses, which is the backbone, which form the backbone of the prosperity of other African countries.
Everyone is saying it. There seems to be a growing consensus that the ANC-led government is to blame, has brought us to this position. What then needs to change? Because it's been going on for quite a while.
Well, one of the things, as I say, is less government involvement that is needed, more education, more direct education. But over and above that, one reason why, you know, South Africa was doing as well as the rest of the world through until around 2012 or so. And then we started seeing it falling behind the rest of the world, not coincidentally, because we had a change in regime, a political regime in around 2008-2009, and we saw ascendancy of a regime that was determined to eat at the trough as much as they could for themselves and for their colleagues, and a lot of people were appointed to government on the basis of their political affiliation to the leadership rather than on the basis of their competence and capability. And we've seen, and this grouping of political elite also embarked upon a very successful program of emaciating the country's institutions, left, right, and center. And they did it especially through wrecking state-owned enterprises and basically raping them of their resources. And this had forced the government, the central government, to rely on having to bail out these institutions more and more. Look at SARS, how that almost went down the tubes as well. Thank goodness we've been able to rescue it as well. But the point is that spate of corruption and state capture has not completely been eradicated. And until such time as it is, and people start really just benefiting from working harder and being more productive and adding value to the economy, we're not going to make any progress. There's far too much reliance on political affiliations to get rich and on empowerment bailouts rather than on productivity and education and hard work and ability.
We heard all the warnings, and we heard, analysts saying that, and those calculating the numbers, saying that it would take years before we can regain what we had lost in state capture. But while that plays out, and we look at other ways of trying to fix this economy and grow what we can in the meantime, what are the more practical things that can be done? I mean, like, just looking at leadership at these various institutions, you spoke about SARS. I mean, the leadership there has been trying to change it, and there have been improvements. But how important is it to have the right leadership in these various institutions that matter to this economy?
I think you've actually said it, all that needs to be said. And what needs to change is the general environment for especially the private sector to feel that there is merit in investing in the country and its future, because that motivation has been destroyed over the past decade and a bit. All we see, despite a government coming out with fancy infrastructural investment programs, what we continuously see is a decline in the level of investment in the economy as a percent of overall activity. People, instead, we see continuous increases in consumer spending, and that people are not saving. They're just eating whatever they can for the moment and letting the future look after itself, which it's not doing. And so we see ever declining economic growth.
Azar, I just want to touch on the VAT hike. that's not happening any longer, but it is now creating this huge hole, 75 billion rand over the medium term, that they would need to find somewhere. Where do we go right now? Because we're still in junk status. The risk of borrowing more money is so much higher. I mean, we pay so much on interest as it is. Where can they go? I mean, we know this could have been avoided, but where do they go now?
Well, the one positive thing is that the government does express awareness of the dangers of trying to borrow that money over and above what it's already having to borrow. And that exudes at least an element of the recognition of the need to just constrain the fiscal largesse that we have seen over many years. But in the broader scheme of things, you say it's a huge amount of money. It's about 25 billion every year. Mm-hmm. Now, government spending, the budget is about 2.5 trillion. So we're talking about trying to find savings for about 1% of what we spend. Now, that's not massive as a proportion. And if and one of the big positives about recent developments is that it seems to have brought to bear, brought a government to a climax in recognizing that it actually has to do what many of us have been calling on it to do for more than a decade. Find out where the wasteful expenditure is, where the corruption is, and cut that out. And they'll easily find 1% extra to be able to devote to the shortfall in tax revenue that might otherwise have come about.
Azhar, always good to talk to you. Thank you for giving me your time this evening. Dr. Azhar Jameen, Director and Chief Economist of Econometrics.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.